Why don't you tell me your golf story? Tell me where you're trying to go. Let's get clear on what the intention is. We can benchmark that. We can build a training. And then we can just make sure we have the right culture to support you as you go along the way. So,
hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on the Tour Coach Podcast. Thanks for listening in. You're about to get some golf information to help your game from the best teachers, mental coaches, players, fitness experts from around the world. These are all the people that I deal with day in, day out, traveling the PGA, LPGA, Corn Ferry Tours, or down there at Old Palm where I do most of my teaching in Palm Beach Gardens. So sit back, relax, and let's get better at the game of golf. And hey, if you like what you hear, please, please, please take a second, like, subscribe, and share it wherever you get your podcast.
All right, joining me here on the Tour Coach is one of the best in the business, one of my good friends, somebody I look up to. I always bounce ideas off him, and he's got a new gig. He's got a new gig. He's moving down where close to where I hang out, Mr. Kevin Kirk. What's up, Kev?
What's up, Tony? Thanks so much for having me on, buddy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've been wanting to do this, and great having you. First of all, congrats on the new gig. Tell everybody a little bit about where we can find you now.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it, Tony. I've just recently signed on with Dutchman's Pipe down in West Palm Beach. It's a new facility down by the airport, and it's just a phenomenal practice area, great golf course, beautiful, just a beautiful kind of I've got a great hotel on site. So
yeah,
definitely want you guys to come out and find me out there. It's we're going to have a lot of fun out there.
Well, South Florida, especially that side of Florida, is becoming, in my opinion, the golf mecca. I mean, it's really the hub of golf with all the young players that are moving down there. And I had you and I talked a bunch on the phone. I mean, after COVID, there's so many people have moved down there, and it's an awesome place. You'll knock it dead. You'll kill it down there. Super happy for you. It's going to be fun having you around.
Well, I'm beyond excited.
You might sneak in a glass or two of wine.
We might just have to do that.
Might have to do it. Before we came on the air, before we recorded, I was talking a little bit about, you know, so many of the folks that listen to us, obviously there's a lot of teachers that listen, which I think is really cool. But also, this is geared for those serious golfers, those golfers that are wanting, you know, and when I say competitive, Kev, I don't mean that they're going to a U.S. amateur qualifier, but maybe they're just being competitive at their club, right? Like they get tired of getting their ass beat in the member guest or the club championship or whatever. And you're one of the best in the world at developing people from one level to another. Thought it'd be great to sit here and talk a little bit about what are some of the keys for you when you assess and you look at a player, and how do you put together? Because I'm a big believer that the road to getting really good or getting a lot better is a journey, and it takes a plan, and it doesn't come in one-hour session that they strap a bunch of shit to you and then tell you one thing and you're cured. Where do you start with this plan? How do you assess, and how do you turn a person into a competitive player?
Well, I think it starts with being able to kind of understand that the person that is in front of you. I mean, everybody's different. There's no two plans that are probably identical, because there's no two people in the world that play golf the same way. And, you know, the principles that we kind of live and die by out there are pretty fixed. I mean, the geometry and the physics and the biomechanics and the anatomy and physiology, those things are the playground that we have to kind of operate within. But relative to how people go about playing golf, they're very, very different. Even, you know, at whatever level that you find, there's a lot of variance between the way people attempt to generate their score. And so golf is played in four buckets. There's off the tee, there's approach, there's around the green, there's on the green. So I think, you know, it starts in my mind trying to help to understand, have that person kind of tell me their golf story. I need to get caught up with them so I don't, you know, try to take them down some sort of road that they're not trying to kind of go down. It's interesting when you invite people to tell you about their golf game. It's always super helpful for me because it allows me to kind of get an idea of what they're, you know, when they feel like they were playing their best, maybe what their challenges are. And it's just a good starting position, you know, point for me, then instead of assuming a bunch of things that, you know, that may or may not be helpful. So I mean, that I do think that kind of that that we'll call it an interview or so, whatever you want to call it, but it's just a chance to, for me to kind of hear their golf story. I think it's just important that they voice that, and so it gets me kind of caught up to, where you started and how you got to where you are today. The next thing that I like to try to kind of look at is try to get some sort of idea about how they perceive themselves in those different areas. I mean, you feel like are you a good driver of the golf ball? Yes or no? Do you put in play off the tee? What tell me about your approach shots. Are you good at long approach, let's say over 100, and poor from 100 to 30, or the other way around? And once you get up around the green, we'll call it inside 30 yards. How do you operate there off the three surfaces: the fairway, the rough, and the bunker? And then on the green, are you a good, long putter or short putter? Try to let them maybe subjectively rate themselves on a 1 to 5 scale, so I can kind of get an idea of where they think they are. And then try to maybe shoot some video or go out and watch them play a few holes and try to figure out, is it matching up with what they're telling me? Because sometimes there can be a mismatch there. And then every now and then, y'all find somebody that has developed just a real clever way to kind of go about being able to kind of do it. That may not be, something that you would teach somebody.
Right.
Like Jim Furyk, and watching Jim Furyk play, you would never teach anybody to do that. But the guy's obviously, one of the best players that ever played the game. So giving people the opportunity to kind of also show me, all right, hey, I'm pretty good at putting, and you watch the putting stroke, and you're going, no way. And then the guy stands up and holes everybody looks at. Okay, well, if that's the case, then I don't need to get in there and try to superimpose my thoughts and my ideas on him. I need to try to figure out how he's doing it, and make sure that he keeps doing that, at a level that allows him to get to the scores that he's trying to get to.
I think that's really important too, like what you were, those types of players. I see a lot of those at the club level. I'm talking like folks that are maybe 15 handicappers trying to become single digits, and you'll say, "Hey, how's your putting?" And they'll say, "I'm a good putter." And you watch them hit some putts and set up, and it wouldn't be what you and I would traditionally. But heck, you talk to their buddies, and you go out and you watch them on the putting green, and you watch them play a couple holes, and you're like, "Well, hell, I mean, for where they are, they're a really good putter." I mean, they make most of all their short ones. They don't three putt a lot. So I think that's a pretty interesting perspective too, because I think that a lot of people, teachers or people, they go to somebody, and if something doesn't look the way it's supposed to, they automatically assume, well, we got to get better at that. And especially with recreational or club level golfers trying to get better, that's a good point, what you just said there.
I did a school last week, and down at our place. And then one of the things that was kind of struck me is, there were some discussions on the range about technique and really trying to help these people, and watching them on the range, trying to onboard some of the new stuff that they were trying to do. It was clearly a struggle for them. And then we went out and watched them play in the afternoon, and they were actually so much better actually playing golf than on the range. I mean, it kind of flipped me on my head a little bit, because sometimes I get the impression that it's the other way around. But these people actually played way, way better, and just, having their own way of kind of getting it done. So, it just kind of gets me back to that idea of, okay, why don't you tell me your golf story? Tell me where you're trying to go. Let's get clear on what the intention is. We can benchmark that. We can build the training, and then we can just make sure we have the right culture to support you as you go along the way. So.
That's something I've always tried to carry in my teaching, that that helping people get better takes a lot of different skill sets. It's not just a me fixing a full swing or whatever. And I think that's something you do such a good job. The time I've spent with you, a lot of it was down at Doral or on the range or at a dinner at a PGA Tour event. But the understanding that, like, really getting somebody better takes more than one thing. It takes a whole To me, it takes a whole comprehensive approach, like you say, of looking at everything and where it goes. It's no different than the accountant looking at your books, trying to find out where the hell all the money is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, the one thing that I've to be a successful coach, you have to be able to kind of get people to where they want to go. So spending enough time on the front end of that to accurately identify what is their intention, what are they trying to do, right? Because if their intention is just to hit better drivers, and I'm out there working on the putting, they're not gonna feel great about that, right? So if they're trying to lower their score, then that's a different discussion than maybe trying to hit some better iron shots. And so You know, for me, I want to take time on the front end to kind of be clear on what's the intention here. What is it that we're actually trying to do? Because once we get clear on that, we can figure out, like I said, we can benchmark that. We can come up with, come up with some training for you, and then we can, just monitor that as we kind of go along. And it taking the time on the front end, I think, is really just so important to.
You know, funny story about that, that it's similar to what you were talking about. Like, I remember a guy I taught early in my career when I was working for Hank, and guy gave the guy 6 or 7 lessons, and I thought I was doing a pretty good job. This golf swing was getting better. Seemed like he was shooting a little better scores. He fired me, and local guy, and somewhere along the line, he was playing. He ran into Hank, my mentor, and Hank said, "Well, why'd you quit going?" He said, "Well, I was shooting better, but I went because I wanted to hit it longer." And he never addressed, like, I was getting better, but I wasn't hitting it longer, right? And that's all I really cared about. And I mean, I think sometimes we just assume that the person, the guy or girl that comes to us, wants to shoot a lower score. Sometimes that's not what they're looking for,
Yeah,
you
I've got a funny story about Curtis Strange. I coached
know?
Curtis for a while, and Curtis was referred to me by Brian Clare on the tour. And so he comes into my office, and this is January, and I've always been a huge, huge, huge Curtis Strange fan. So I was a little bit, trying to kind of make sure I had done all my homework and pulled up some old film and got all the stats put together. And so he comes in, and I kind of start in this interview, and I'm a little bit excited, a little bit anxious. And so he starts kind of, I start taking him through this interview, and he starts giving me some answers. And so I just out of nowhere just derailed myself, and I said, "Hey, listen, I took the liberty to kind of pull up some old film of you, some old film and some new film, and I've looked at your stats." And he just stops me. He says, "Hey," he goes, "let me tell you about my life here real quick, okay?" He goes, "I play about 10 events a year." He goes, "I hunt." He goes, "I do about 10 corporate outings a year. I hunt and fish a lot, and I'm really happy." He goes, "I've already beat these guys. I don't need to beat them anymore. I just want to hit it more solid when I play." And I'm like, okay, so that's different, because I'm in my mind, I'm getting ready to take it down this pathway of, okay, well, bet relative to the guys you're competing against, these are the benchmarks that you have to kind of be at. You're above here, you're below here. And he's like, "Oh, no. Let me set the playbook for you." So, for me, just making sure that I take a breath on the front end, take a little time to kind of figure out what it is that they're wanting to do. And we had a really fun time, for 4 or 5 years, just, getting together, talking golf, hitting a few golf balls, and he was delighted that, and that's really all he wanted. So.
That's interesting. That's a good story right there. Obviously there's all different ranges players come in and, but they're, wanting to get better. They're wanting to be competitive. I like what you talked about watching them play on the golf course. I think that's, I did something interesting. I think you would actually really like this. I had, four pretty good junior players. And I made them do a worst ball scramble the other day.
Love that.
And then I did had them do that for 3 holes. Our good friend Coop, Coop, and one of my young players, Will McFadden, was with them, coach, helping us coach them. And afterwards, we were sitting down having a beer, and Coop couldn't believe it, like how good they played in the worst ball scramble, where they had to really think about not putting themselves versus when they played their ball and they got to play the best of a 2 ball scramble. I mean, they hit it all over the place because it didn't matter. And I thought of you when we did it, because I was like, it was a pretty valuable teaching experience to me for somebody of any skill level. Like, I thought it was pretty cool because, like, but that, like, if you don't go out with a player on the golf course or don't give them some homework to do out there, you've got no clue. And, like, we're watching, you see it all the time. You see kids that, yeah, we saw them all the time down there at Doral together, like, you and I couldn't figure out how the hell they'd shoot above 74. And then you'd look at them in a golf tournament and they'd shoot 80. You're like, how the hell is it? But you don't go watch them on the golf course. You don't know.
Yeah, and so I do think that the metrics around golf are, pardon me, are important. So understanding, benchmarks for, let's say, percentage of shots in fairway, greens regulation, up and downs, having the players keep up with that stuff is helpful, because that can give you a little snapshot of what they're doing, whether it be in a single round or over, a group of rounds or a period of time. And then that in combination with going out and watching them play, I think is probably, very underutilized in golf. I mean, almost nobody does it. We've got all of our technology set up, and we put people in these bays and these, pristine environments, and have them hit off mats. And unfortunately, golf is not played that way. Golf is played, outdoors. And one of the things that's seriously underestimated is the impact of the environment. The environment is king. It's good. The players are reacting to the environment, the turf conditions, the wind direction, heat and cold. I mean, and so to try to sit around in a real controlled environment when golf is played in a hostile environment, I think it's too far disconnected. So I love the idea of letting them generate some stats, going to watch them play, and then maybe trying to start asking some questions from there.
Yeah, and again, and I think, like, obviously each level it changes kind of how, how good they have to be at certain ones. And so if you like, when you start with somebody that's just trying to break 80, they're a low 80 shooter, even if it's whether it's a kid or a person at the club, what are the areas you might focus on different with them versus the, good high school player or new college player that's looking to take that next level?
So just from a benchmarking perspective, let's just start with, okay, the objective is to break 80. So that's the stated intention. So the benchmarks for that would be half the fairways, half the greens, get it up and down half the time, and take 31 putts. Now, those are proven statistics relative to that scoring level. And so it would start with this idea that, okay, how are you when you go out to play, let's say if you chart 5 rounds, how are you relative to those benchmarks? Do you hit, at least half the fairways? Are you hitting at least half the greens? And usually what you'll see is, okay, so the players are going to be pretty good at a couple things, and the low hanging fruit might be, for example, it might be drive it pretty good. My iron plays okay. I'm getting it up and down 25% of the time and taking 36 putts. Well, you can sit here and tell me all you want to about the fact that your long irons need to get better, but the low hanging fruit for you here, Chief, is going to be this, chipping the ball better and learning how to get it up and control yourself on the green. And so relative to the, looking to being able to use those benchmarks to determine, okay, what are the low hanging fruit, and pick those off first. And then if you want to kind of get into some more, detailed things relative to, I want to improve my long irons, that's great, but it's not going to impact your score that much. And then, so being able to show them that, and then, if this lowering of the score is really what you want to do, then this is how good you have to be. This is what good is. The only other thing you have to keep in mind with players is, do they have a high magnitude miss that brings, double or triple into play? So if they're hitting all their benchmarks, but 3 times around they're hitting it out of play and making doubles and triples, then you need to kind of, have a look at that high magnitude miss. And if a person wants to get to even par, it's only 10% better. So 10% would be 60% of the fairways, 60% of the greens, 60% up and down, and 30 putts. If they want to be a world-class player, it's 10% better than that. So 70% of the fairways, 70% of the greens, 70% up and down, and 29 putts. Now, you can not like all that, but that's if you want a money ball, that's the money ball. That's what's required to shoot those different levels of score.
I think the fascinating thing about that is if you and I were sitting there with probably a group of 5 to 15 handicappers, and you said, "Hey, how many greens and how many fairways do you have to hit more than what you do to become a world-class player?" I would bet you 90% of them would be so far off.
Oh,
On,
shocking.
and on the high side, they would think that they're so much further away. And going back to what you said about the high magnitude miss, I always like to ask recreational player, club level players, or obviously most of the juniors use some sort of stats now, but like, hey, if you make worse than a bogey, just write it down and tell me next time over your last 4 or 5 rounds what caused the double. And there's almost always a trend in there where I dump wedges off of downhill slopes into the water, or two, three, like you said, 2, 3 times around, I hit the thing 50 yards right. Well, heck, that affects what you and I are going to work on.
Absolutely. So So relative to score, I mean, that's the if we're if score is the measuring tool here, then understanding how score is generated is really important, and making sure that the player understands that. And so, and it's really interesting, Tony. I mean, in a lot of cases, if you simply give them the information, a lot of times they can organically sort it out. They just, gosh, I didn't know I had to be that good, or gosh, I'm better here than I thought. I can free up some attention to go work on something else. So, for me, it's really, if score is the objective, then we need to talk about what good is and how good do you have to be in these different areas to be able to shoot the scores you're trying to shoot.
The whole idea too about I think that really getting down to it and explaining to them, because like you said, I think some folks are better at certain areas by far than they think. And we've watched players where you're like, hey man, like that's pretty damn good, and then some of it can be, I mean, to be honest, some of it can be just like when I think of off the tee stuff, I'll see a lot of golfers that just have one shot, one speed. That's all they do. And yet, I know we've been at a million tour events, and I know guys you've taught, I mean, they've got different shots and different speeds they'll go to fit things in. And to me, that's just like an area like when you, how few golfers understand that. And that yet, if you sit down and you're like, well, hey, what if you, I'm just, what if you tee it low and you go ahead and you just hit a low cut out there, but you're going to hit that thing in fairway every time? Like how you can help people reduce scores without just jumping in there and changing everything.
Yeah, I think to your point, there's a lot of, helping them get a kind of a safe shot that they can kind of depend on off the tee is really important. And a lot of the guys on tour will use that, just tee it close to the ground and just hit that little bleeder out there. So yeah, so I think, you start kind of looking at all that. I mean, I also, starting kind of also kind of maybe approach it from a coaching perspective. If you start kind of looking at the number, looking at how they generate their score, and try to help them figure out kind of what those low hanging fruit are. That's probably the quickest way to lowering score. One of the things you talked about is, things come up, as you kind of get into this. Okay, so for example, if you got a guy that's maybe kind of struggling with, not driving in the fairway enough, okay, and you start talking to him, you said, well, do you have a strategy off the tee? No, I just grab my driver and hit it every hole. Okay, well, the tour players, when they're looking at a shot off the tee, they're saying, okay, if I took 10 shots from here with this club, what's going to happen? And they're trying to kind of get to 7 out of 10 before they pull a club and pick a target. And that can change from day to day. When they're feeling really good and if their driver swing feels great, the fairways, that's a different story than a day where they've hit some kind of loose shots and, want to have to stand up there and still, so that 70% rule is a really good rule to try to make sure that you get, it allows you to kind of go through, try to make sure that you're picking a high percentage shot on every shot that you play. So,
I find I with going out on the golf course with golfers of all these levels that we're talking, I find it interesting how many of them when you'll say, well, why are I'm going to hit driver here, but I have to hit a good one to be able to get over, or I've got to hit a really good one or I'm a, what it's out of play. Well, then that's not the club. If
correct.
you have to hit your best drive, I mean, I get it if it's the 18th hole and you got a chance, or 16, you got a chance to win the golf tournament. It's the only way to make, but day in, day out, that's not the way to
Yeah,
play.
so if you put it in traffic light, let's say, format, where 7 out of 10 or higher is a green light shot, 4 to 6 out of 10 is a yellow light shot, and 0 or 3 out of 10 is a red light shot. The tour players that I've been around are really good at picking mostly green light shots with a few yellows. Okay, they never, unless you, like you said, last hole of the tournament, trying to kind of, in a match play scenario, they'll take on a red light shot from time to time, but it's only very, very frequently. And watching the amateurs play and watching people go out there on the golf course, it's a lot of yellows and reds and with a few greens, so I think a lot of it has to do with just the way they're kind of looking at, if you want to lower your score, one of the other ways to do is just keep that 7 out of 10 rule kind of going and pick that high percentage shot.
Another thing I don't think they do very well is that I know that, I can remember first time going to tour events And the first time too, like where you're with the player, but then they're playing a practice round with somebody that's one of the best in the world. How much they look at where they want to leave the ball and assume that they're going to miss some shots.
Yeah.
Recreational golfer or the guy trying to become a 5 handicap from 10 never thinks about that stuff.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, Tony, on the tour is the level of kind of detail that they get into about a mm-hmm. shot is much mm-hmm. higher. So they don't use lasers on the tour. They use yardage books. Mm-hmm. So yardage book, you've got, okay, here we are. Here's the distance to the front of the green. Here's where the pin is. Here's, you know, there's possibly a discussion about, you know, an over distance. There might be a carry distance over a bunker that they have to manage. There might be a ridge that they're trying to kind of get, you know. So their thought process is a lot deeper than even the high school and college kids. I mean, I'm on them all the time. Just put the laser down, you know.
Right.
So it's not just a, you know, just 157 go, right? Then. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, okay, what's the front? The front's 42. Okay, well, how far are the greens rolling? They're rolling about seven when the balls land. Okay, so this is a, you know, let's say kind of 42 plus seven. That's a 30. You know, that's a 49 shot. It's not a 57 shot, right? And which side are we approaching from, right or left? Okay, we got to approach from the left. Okay, all right, now 149 approaching from the left. Let's go. So,
no, that's awesome stuff. And again, too. Kind of the last part of this is like to me understanding how to practice stuff. Like, you know, I do a lot of stuff with guys, players of all where like, you know, hit one, you should never be hitting at something on the range where you don't know the yardage.
Right.
But two, hit some shots that are like what you need to do on the golf course. It's 100 and like you were just talking about, it's 135 to that flag, but it's got to carry 130 and it can't go left of the flag. Like those are the scenarios that you encounter. And to me, they don't ever try to do that until they get on the golf course.
Yeah.
It's so much easier if you practice that way a little bit. And again, I know you're big on that. I've picked your brain numerous times on how to practice, but a big portion of the buckets of helping people make these steps is understanding how to go practice it and work on it.
And, you know, one of the things I also tell kids, if you cannot control your attention on the driving range, then chip and putt and play. Just don't go there. Right.
Right.
Just go to the golf course and spend your time out there. You know, if the range is just, you know, this wide open space and you can't get yourself organized. And some people are really good in the range. I mean, they can really narrow their focus and their attention. But some people, it's very difficult for them to do that. And those types of players literally chip and putt a little bit and just stay on the golf course as much as you possibly can.
Absolutely. Kev, this is awesome stuff. Thanks as always for sitting in. Looking forward to more wine and some tacos down there at Rocco's and hanging out. Great. Going to be great having you down there. Look forward to catching up.
Thanks, pal. I sure appreciate the invite. And as always, Tony, thanks for all you do for everybody in the golf space. You're amazing. And I'm proud to be your friend, and I appreciate you letting me be on your show.
I appreciate it, buddy. Always look forward to doing it again.